From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to see you guys. Thank you. Thank you so much. We do have a great show for you today. 80s film icon Molly Ringwald will be with us later, which is pretty cool. But first, the sports world is abuzz, waiting to find out where LeBron James is going to play basketball. Now, every NBA city is trying to woo him. The New Jersey Nets, for example, got Jay-Z to give him the hard sell. But we here in Chicago, we have got a secret weapon.
Hi, LeBron. It's me, Carl. Hey, look, LeBron, you come to Chicago, and I'll record the greeting on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well, the rest of you better hurry up and call, because LeBron's going to be bursting in any second. The number here is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Caitlin, and I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Hey, Caitlin's a lovely name. What's up in Philadelphia?
We're actually having a nice summer day as opposed to the stinky, soggy, muggy weather we were having a few days ago.
And what do you do there?
I'm a registered nurse. I actually just got off a 12-hour shift an hour ago or so.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that a very stressful job?
It's never boring, that's for sure.
Do you have access to drugs?
Don't get upset. He asks that of everyone. Caitlin, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, a comedian who is performing at the Gene Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City and at the Tower Theater in Fresno, California, July 16th and 17th. Paula Poundstone is right here.
Hi, Paula.
Next up, you know her from Saturday Night Live and the monologues God Said Ha and Letting Go of God. We know her as Julia Sweeney is right here.
Hi, Julia.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Finally, it's a humorist and the author of the new book, Driving Like Crazy, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, P.J.
Caitlin, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to play?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Now, for your first quote, we want you to listen to a very shocked resident of a New Jersey suburb talking about her neighbor who was just taken away by the FBI.
They couldn't have been. Look what she did with the hydrangeas.
So that woman was surprised her neighbor turned out to be what?
A deep undercover Russian spy.
Yes, indeed. It's so cool. The FBI, they swoop in. They arrest 11 people living and working among us, our friends and neighbors. The spies, it's just like out of a movie. But as it turns out, it's a really dull movie.
Russia has all our hydrangea secrets.
It's true. Well, that's the question. Why would Russia go to the trouble and time to secret their agents in our suburbs? What could they possibly learn? We have infiltrated Montclair, New Jersey PTA and are destabilizing it from within. And the Russian spymaster's like, excellent work, Agent X. Now infiltrate Olive Garden and steal secret of never-ending pasta bowl. And this is one of their passphrases, these spies, that to identify yourself to another spy. The first person says, excuse me, but haven't we met in California last summer? And the response is, no, I think it was the Hamptons, which confirms the person you're speaking to is either a Russian spy or one of the Real Housewives of New York.
Right. Is that really what they were saying?
Yes.
They really said that?
That was a real one.
And they have other cities, too, because they had other ones where they'd say, didn't I know you in Milan?
Yes.
No, it was in
Moscow.
Prague.
I mean,
no.
Oh, did I say that out loud? I mean, Yonkers.
It's actually kind of hard to square this whole thing with our image of spies. You know, like imagine James Bond getting married to Pussy Galore.
This is wrecking
and settling down in
Yonkers.
Montclair. Or wherever. It'd be like, it's James Bond, view to a cul-de-sac. He'd have a minivan, but it'd be a special minivan from Q. It would instantly transform into a riding mower. Anyway, very good, Caitlin. Here is your next quote.
We have to have a little back and forth every once in a while, or this place would be boring as hell, I tell you.
That was Senator Orrin Hatch doing his best to keep what hearings interesting this week?
Alina Kagan's Supreme Court nominee. Yeah.
Yes, I was going to give you a hint. He failed. Yes, the Kagan hearings. Alina Kagan herself once said that Supreme Court nomination hearings were vapid and boring, and nominees should be required to say what they really thought. This week, she backed off that position so fast, she left a nominee-shaped hole in the back wall of the hearing room. In fact, Kagan said, you know, she had to defend herself. You know, you said these were boring and nominees should speak their minds. And she said, well, actually, she was advised to say nothing of her actual opinions by Senator Hatch himself. Can you imagine that? Being taught to be boring by Orrin Hatch? That's like free racism lessons from Mel Gibson.
There was a good line of questioning, though, about whether or not Congress could pass a law requiring everybody to eat fruits and vegetables.
Right.
And how would she feel about that?
Yeah, she said that they could, but that fruit roll-ups would come under. She said that's opening up a can of worms.
Yeah.
Because then you got your gushers and your fruit roll-ups, and that's going to be a problem.
And would tomatoes be a fruit or a vegetable?
Well, that, again, has to be
That's
gone into.
That's been debated.
She can't.
Peanuts.
Exactly. Well, you just want to kick the forefathers for not being clear about the tomato.
You do.
Yeah.
It looked like smooth sailing for Kagan, but then just at the very end, at the very last day, Senator Feinstein asked, haven't we met in California last summer? And Kagan said, no, I think it was the Hamptons.
Uh-oh!
All right, here's your last quote.
There are lots of things I can do now, but at the top of the list is getting a tattoo and a motorcycle. What's something you'd never do?
That was somebody who was hanging up his suspenders after 25 years on CNN. Who was it?
Oh, man, that's Larry King.
It is Larry King. The great interviewer is retiring from CNN soon after the news hit that his ratings had sunk to around 750,000 people per night. Basically, his audience was composed entirely of his ex-wives and children. That's right. He is retiring to spend more time with his families. He said this week, he was reflecting on his career, he said that he never had prepared for an interview. Really? He just comes up with questions. He comes up with questions like, so, what's it like to be you, off the top of his head?
He shocked the nation with that one.
Yeah.
To me, I don't know, the endless questions about Anna Nicole Smith coming up, regardless of who he was interviewing.
You were interviewed by him, though.
I was interviewed by him. I was interviewed by him before Anna Nicole Smith OD'd, and he still asked me about it. It was hard to get him on topic.
We find it hard to imagine him in retirement, mainly because cable news was the one place he could be himself and not seem absolutely nuts. How's he going to manage just puttering around the house in his suspender jammies? Doing interviews, you know, at breakfast. Cornflakes, do you have a question for the spoon?
I said feel to be covered with milk.
Wife in the toilet, you're next. Larry, would you close the door, please? Carl, how did Caitlin do?
Caitlin was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Caitlin, you win our prize.
Well done.
Hey, Caitlin.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Julia, in a blow to astronauts and wannabe astronauts, NASA finally admitted that under no circumstances do they allow what in space?
What they don't allow in space, under no circumstances. Spouses and kids?
Close. What is
animals?
What is spouses?
Fish?
What is spouses
How
do?
How do you get spouses sometimes? And kids?
Oh, sex!
Yes, sex!
Oh, God, I knew that!
There has never been an official stated policy, but this week a NASA commander made it explicit he was answering a question. And he said, quote, personal relationships are not an issue, we don't have them, and we won't, unquote. Now, they instituted this policy of no sex after an unreported incident back in 1987, where a shuttle astronaut went on a spacewalk, and he came back, and he found a necktie tied onto the knob of the airlock. And he had to wait out there for a while. So they instituted a complete ban on sex. They threw out the previous policy, which had been known informally as what happens in low Earth orbit stays in low Earth orbit. Or if the shuttle's rocking, don't come knocking. Now, Julia, do you think this is wise? You seem.
No, I don't.
You don't think this is wise.
I think it's going to happen. You
really?
Should just, yeah, they should just have a special room. Why pretend it's not going to happen?
I believe in NASA they call it a module. I'm sorry, but you'll need to go into the Nookie module for this. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Stephen Shapiro. I live in Greensboro, North Carolina.
How are things in Greensboro?
Well, I haven't been there a little while, but I understand from friends that it's hot and beautiful.
Really, where are you now?
I'm in Massachusetts, finishing up my sabbatical.
So you're a teacher then?
Yes.
And how did you decide to spend your sabbatical?
Well, I'm working on developing courses and some programming.
You didn't just goof off?
I did that too.
Okay, I'm glad you did. Well, welcome to the show, Stephen. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Stephen's topic?
Something borrowed, something blue, something with an implanted microchip.
We are in the thick of wedding season, and while so many weddings are about tradition, the white dress, the garter, the drunk uncle getting a little too nutty in the dance floor during single ladies, weddings are constantly evolving. This week we read about an innovation in the ritual that makes us want to renew our vows. Our panelists will tell you three stories about new things at weddings. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. First up, let's hear from P.J. O'Rourke.
Best shyster, mouthpiece of honor. Melissa Carlson, owner of Vow Events, one of the Southern California's largest wedding planning companies, says there's a new fashion in wedding ceremonies. The groom waits at the altar with his lawyer while the bride is escorted down the aisle by her lawyer. Partly this is the result of complicated modern families, says Carlson. Sometimes a bride will have two or three stepfathers and no real father in the picture. Also, just the one traditional best man and one maid of honor excludes too many people in this 3,000 BFFs on my Facebook page era. But, says Carlson, the real reason is prenups. These contract negotiations, it's so complicated that the bride and groom end up being closer to their lawyers than anyone else. Ralph Mercer, a Los Angeles attorney specializing in marriage law, confirms the trend. Several of the partners in his firm have given away the bride. Well, says Mercer, not given away. We're lawyers. It's a $200 hourly billing rate, reception included.
Lawyers, part of the wedding party at certain weddings. Your next story of the newest thing in nuptials comes from Julia Sweeney.
Today's bride has so much to manage on her big day, her hair and makeup, the vows, the catering, the guest list. And in all that hubbub and excitement, inevitably something gets neglected, like, for example, her bladder. But not anymore, according to Marie Claire magazine. I guess before they say I do, some brides are saying depends. You see, brides have begun wearing more and more elaborate dresses, some taking 20 minutes to take on and off. What is the bride with a need to go to do? Bridal diapers, of course. Adult diapers with an addition of lace and satin are becoming a new trend. Sure, it's uncomfortable and bulky, but they don't have to worry about missing 1 minute of the most important day of their lives. Plus, what better way to bond with aging new in-laws than over undergarments and their absorbency rates?
The Bridal Diaper, latest part of the trousseau. Your last story of wedding innovations comes from Paula Poundstone.
No one ever forgets a lemon wedding, claims the slogan of Lemon Weddings, the best-kept secret in the dynamic wedding industry, and it may be true. Fairy tale weddings aren't memorable, says founder Kevin Hodgson. Anyway, something always goes wrong. But the truth is, that's the part people remember. Lemon Weddings produces a disaster, which is the dramatic turning point for a romantic theatrical wedding. In one Lemon Weddings wedding, the bride's bun unraveled, and after an uncomfortable moment of trying to keep the baby's breath and locks atop her head, the groom took her hand, turned to the crowd, asked for a brush, and brushed her hair down while stating his vows. In one scenario, a pipe breaks, and the bride raced up a catwalk to repair it, and the groom burst into what appeared to be an improvised version of If You Were a Plumber and I Was a Man. In one of the most popular lemon wedding scenarios, the groom subtly activates a loud whoopee cushion. And just after a brief awkward moment, the bride sings, "You are the wind beneath my wings."
All right. One of these is something you can add to your upcoming nuptials. Is it from P.G.R. O'Rourke, the new tradition in some places of having lawyers accompany the bride and groom to give them away at $200 an hour? From Julia Sweeney, bridal diapers, just so that the bride has one less thing to worry about on her big day? Or from Paula Poundstone, prearranged scripted disasters, just to make it that much more romantic and wonderful when everything turns out? Which of these is the real story of an innovation in modern weddings?
Oh, my goodness.
This is a tough one.
Yes, it is. Oh, dear. I hate the thought of the lawyers being part of all these weddings. The third one sounds more fun.
Disasters.
But people tend to be more serious. Well, I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C. Paula's story of the disasters.
Yes.
Being prearranged so that people can recover from them, and it'll be exciting. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to a journalist in the field who covered this story.
I would say I'm surprised that someone came up with bridal diapers, but to be honest, I'm surprised. Crazy stuff.
Oh, dear.
Your mistake was you thought about brides when you should have been thinking about us and what we would want to bring to you. That was Courtney Dunlop. She's the contributing beauty editor to Marie Claire magazine. They broke the story about bridal diapers, as you have no doubt figured out to your horror.
Yes.
It was Julia's story that was true, so you did not win her prize, but you did earn a point for Paula for her very charming and, I think, workable idea.
Yeah.
Of scripted disasters at weddings. So thank you so much for that, and thanks for playing.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, bud.
And now the game where we invite on icons and try to act cool around them. 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. If you were a teenager in the 1980s, you watched those movies and you said, "My God, who told them about me?" Our guest, Molly Ringwald, starred in all of them. Now she's on The Secret Life of the American Teenager on ABC. She has a new book out. It's called Getting the Pretty Back. Molly Ringwald, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So excited to talk to you. As someone more or less your age who lived in the same kind of suburbs as depicted in those great John Hughes movies and saw my life reflected on screen. Now, in your book, Getting the Pretty Back, one of the things you say is that because of that success in those movies, you've been preserved at the age of 16, 17 for a lot of people.
Yeah, in a way, it's sort of like every woman's fantasy, in a way. They get to stay a teenager forever. But in my case, I think it gets a little old after a while.
Is it weird for you for people to see that you are, in fact, an adult now? And do they act funny around you because of it?
Well, no. I mean, I get the odd question about whether or not I can put on lipstick with my breath. But other than that, a lot of my fans have families of their own now, and so it goes without saying that if they grew up, I grew up too. So
yeah.
most, Most people accept it.
I imagine people also must be grateful to you, because like I said, your movies sort of spoke for a lot of people at that time.
Yeah, they're kind of a touchstone. I mean, if you grew up, you know, certainly in this country, you know, they were pretty hard to miss, and they seem to resonate with subsequent generations. So, I mean, it's pretty nice. You know, people have really nice associations with me. You know, people that have been married for years and they have kids and everything, and they say, oh, they're, you know, my first date was going to see Pretty in Pink, and, you know, I get that a lot.
Now, we were part of this group of actors who were called, I don't think you ever called yourselves this, but the press at the time called you guys the Brat Pack. You and Rob Lowe and Judd Nelson and Emilio Estevez and Demi Moore. I mean, was that real at all? Did you actually, like, hang out when you weren't performing together?
Not really, no. It was really just a term that was coined, you know, by this New York Magazine writer. We weren't really hanging out. I mean, I was quite a bit younger. I was like the only one that was really the age that I was playing, and most everybody else was already in their 20s. So, there wasn't really a lot of hanging out going on my part, at least.
Really?
I was sort of home doing homework.
Now, it turns out that you were young partially because you got your start as a performer quite young, right?
Yes, I did.
And we didn't know this about you, but you are and were at the time a singer. In fact, we have, this is a piece of tape, this is the vocal stylings of Molly Ringwald.
Oh, boy.
Come along, get your partner, wear your brand, brand new gown, for there's gonna be a party in
wow.
this little town, where you know everybody, and they all know you, and you've got a jazz band just to drive away the blues, when you hear that music start to play.
First of all, I have to ask, that's you, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, according to you were six.
I was a 6 year old chanteuse with my father's jazz band.
Oh, wow.
Jazz band.
And how did, so your father was a jazz musician. Is that how it came about that he?
Yes, and he still is a jazz musician. I started performing him when I was 3 and a half, and recorded my first album when I was 6.
And wow.
That was my deep, dark past before all the John Hughes movies.
Now, do a lot of people that knew of your performances when you were 6, are they surprised to see that you're older now?
That's a great question.
I mean, you really are. If I were to ask somebody to list things that, like, say to the 80s to them, they would probably say, okay, Ronald Reagan, Olivia Newton-John, Molly Ringwald. You are, like, hugely iconic of that decade. Does that ever get tired?
You know, I guess so. You know, in a way, I don't really consider myself so much a part of the 80s any more than any other person. You know, I mean, it's just a decade that I lived through.
I'm sorry, I hate to disagree with the guest, but no, that is not true.
No, I'm saying that's from my point of view.
Right, okay.
I'm not living in the 80s in any way. I don't really have any association with it other than the fact that I was younger and that's what I was doing. That's what I happened to have been doing when I was a teenager.
I was just wondering if there's any other decade you'd rather be associated with.
No, I think 80s is a pretty cool one.
It's hard.
I was just talking to my co-star of Secret Life, Shailene, who's a teenager now, and she says, do you think that people are going to look back in our time and want to, like, dress the way that we are? And I said, well, yeah, of course. And she's like, but, I mean, we don't have any style now. I mean, like, in the 80s, you were, like, doing something. I said, well, that's just the way that it seems now because we're in the middle of this decade. But obviously, it's going to be vintage one day, like everything else.
The covered wagon people used to say that as well. So, do you think anybody will want to wear a bustle and a snood?
Drive around on the Great Plains.
We have one more question for you before we go to the game. What we do before our guest comes on is we announce on our Twitter feed, which is wait, just one word, what people might want to ask our guest this week. And this was one of the questions, and we have to ask it. It's a particular, I guess, peril of your fame. How often do creepy dudes who have seen 16 Candles ask you if they can have your underwear?
More times than I would care to count.
There you go. It's the burden of fame and success, I'm afraid.
Yeah. It's actually that one thing that has prevented me from showing the movie to my 6-year-old. It's really close.
Well, Molly Ringwald, we're so delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
The Robert C. Byrd Memorial Not My Job Quiz.
Oh, boy.
Since the late Senator Byrd, who passed away this week at the age of 92, liked to name things after himself, who are we to argue? We're going to ask you three questions about the remarkable life and career of Senator Robert Byrd. If you get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Molly Ringwald playing for?
Molly is playing for Alex Stoja from Montreal.
All right. Ready to play, Molly?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Now, you know, Senator Byrd loved to make speeches on the Senate floor, his most memorable one probably being the one he made in opposition to the Iraq War. However, he once took to the floor of the Senate to protest what? A, the cancellation of the TV series Gunsmoke. B, the removal of spittoons from the bars of West Virginia. Or C, the use of electrical amplification at a nitty-gritty dirt band concert.
I'll go with the spittoon.
The spittoons. He protested the removal of spittoons, you think?
Yeah.
No, it was actually he protested the cancellation of Gunsmoke.
Oh, man.
He really liked Gunsmoke. What can I tell you?
Okay.
That's all right. You still got two more to go. You can still get this. To thank their benefactor, the people of West Virginia erected a statue of him in the rotunda of their state capitol. Local lore has it that the statue was arranged in such a way that what? A, at 5 p.m., his shadow intersects with another to make a dollar sign. B, if you stand beneath it, his hands point at your pockets. Or C, when the wind blows around it in a particular way, it whistles ka-ching. You're going
to
go for the, if you stand beneath it, his hands point at your pockets.
Yeah.
You're right. That's what it does.
Wow.
His hands are pointing directly into your pockets, whence he derived so much. All right. Last question. As you say, Molly, if you get this one right, you win it all. Like we said, he was honored in his home state for the billions he brought there in federal aid and investment. Among other things, he got the federal government to pay for what in West Virginia? A, an $18 million bridge that goes over a culvert 3 feet deep. B, a Coast Guard station in a state that's 100 miles inland. Or C, a $40 million museum and research center devoted to the music made with a bent saw. You know, boing, that kind of thing.
What was the second one?
The second one was the Coast Guard station.
The audience seems to like that.
The audience likes that one.
All right. I guess I'll go with the Coast Guard.
You're going to go with the Coast Guard station?
Yeah.
You're right. That's what it is. The Coast Guard National Maritime Center is in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and it oversees mariners who are using the port of New Orleans. Why is it in West Virginia then? Well, somewhere Robert Byrd is smiling about that. Carl, how did Molly Ringwald do in our quiz?
Molly had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Alex Stoja. Congratulations, Molly.
Well
Yay!
Done. Molly Ringwald is an accomplished actress. She is also the author of the book Getting the Pretty Back. It's in your bookstores now. Molly Ringwald, thank you so much for being with us.
Bye, Molly.
And thanks
Bye.
For all the great work. Bye-bye, Bye. Molly. Just a minute. Carl will list the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis in our listener limerick challenge. Look, you got better ones, send them in, okay? If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, we all know magazines are in trouble, so it must have been encouraging news for the industry when a new one came out this week. Aimed at a demographic generally underserved on newsstands. The magazine is called Inspire, and who is it for?
Preachers.
No.
I feel like I do know this, but somehow it's not coming to me. Are you allowed to give me a hint?
I am. Everybody loves the regular feature in the magazine, Infidels. They're just like us.
Oh, it's for terrorists.
Yes, for jihadi terrorists.
Yeah.
Yes. No longer will terrorists have to rely only on magazines like Car Bomb and Driver, U.S. Jews and World Report, or Martha Stewart Living. Now, they have Inspire. The magazine aims at the whole jihadist, helping them lead their best life now. Sort of like Oprah's O magazine for people who'd like to murder Oprah. The first issue has, and this is all true, exclusive interviews with Al-Qaeda leaders, a how-to on making a bomb in your mom's kitchen, and rankings of madrasas, no doubt based on their reputations as party madrasas. No magazine has done this much to set back the U.S. war on terror since this month's Rolling Stone.
To sell the magazine. You know, I've always wondered, whenever they have, like, one of these tapes, like, they'll have a tape of Bin Laden or something, and then they say, on the news, they'll say, well, we got this from the Al Jazeera Network.
Yeah.
I always think that somebody should go to somebody at the Al Jazeera Network and say, where did you get it? And that could be a clue.
As to where the... Yeah.
You're saying if somebody stood at the magazine stand and watched to see who would buy these magazines.
Well, no. I'll tell you something.
Maybe.
When there's an article about me, I'm not proud of this, but I do go, you know, if I know about it, you know, I might go, I might not necessarily even buy the magazine, but I'll kind of, you know, flip through and, you know, just glance for a second. And so I would think that, you know, we all have egos. I would think that, you know, if there was a story about a really good terrorist... I mean, you know, I'm not CIA trained, but it seems to me.
If this works, there's another line of jihadi magazines ready to go. Better Caves and Gardens. Bomb Appetit. Ladies Never Leave the Home Journal. PJ, Dell Computer donated computers to the University of Texas's math department, but they broke. They didn't work. Dell says it was the university's fault because they shouldn't have used the computers to do what?
Math.
Right. Well, really hard math, anyway.
Yeah,
According to legal
papers. Big, long division.
Oh, yeah, those tough problems.
Ooh, with fractions.
The one with the train leaving this way at this speed,
yeah.
And the other one. That's. According to legal papers in a lawsuit about this that just became public, Dell knew the computers that they had sent over to the university had faulty motherboards, that they were leaking chemicals, causing massive breakdowns. But Dell said the problem was, well, all that tough math was freaking the computers out. To avoid future problems, Dell told the university that they should try the if you don't know, just answer C algorithm. Yes. They suggested giving the computers calculators to help with the tougher problems. And if that didn't work, they suggested that the computers simply just become English majors.
My kids have they teach this thing, what is it, number.
Arithmetic?
No.
I'll teach that.
Number sense.
Number sense.
Yeah. Right. Where that, like, the homework for the night will just be think about three.
No, we go through the whole thing about it's all about how you feel about multiplication.
Yeah, exactly.
How do your kids feel about multiplication?
They think it sucks. Your kids feel about multiplication.
Yeah, but you're in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah.
Okay, the difference between New Hampshire schools and California schools is my kids think it sucks, so they don't have to do it. They take it that one step further. They go, oh, well, then don't.
Paula, organizers of a fair in Switzerland are coming under fire. One of the inflatable bouncy attractions, you know, they've got there for the kids, is being called sick and offensive just because it's modeled to look like what?
Sick and offensive. It's modeled to look like a mouth.
No.
No. It's modeled to look like a kidney.
No. Or even if, like, an inflatable iceberg dead ahead.
Oh, it was an inflatable Titanic?
Yeah.
Well, why is that offensive?
It's a 40-foot long inflatable Titanic thing. It comes completely.
If the Titanic had been inflatable, none of those people would have died. What's offensive about that?
And it represents only half the ship, the other half having presumably already disappeared beneath the parking lot. Tots are encouraged to bounce inside and then climb the keel and then slide down the deck, presumably to their pretend deaths.
This is not offensive. This is preparing them for life.
Exactly. One visitor said, "It's pretty sick. It's like having a bouncy graveyard," unquote. Organizers say the Titanic Bouncy Castle is very popular, so they've decided to go ahead with some of the other more controversial bouncers based in disasters, including the Bouncy Hindenburg, the Bouncy Chernobyl nuclear plant,
oh God,
and Bouncy Charlie Sheen.
I'd let my kid play in every one of them.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our show in Oklahoma City on September 23rd. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Esther Will from Tampa, Florida.
Hey, how are things in Tampa?
Hot.
So apparently your immediate family is here. Nice to see you. What do you do there in Tampa?
I do menu engineering for restaurants.
Menu engineering?
Yes.
What is involved in engineering a menu? Make it so that it folds in the middle. No, seriously, what goes into engineering a menu?
Well, we do mainly pricing. So if you were to open up a Peter's Pie Shop, I would tell you what to charge for your pies.
Isn't the answer always as much as humanly possible?
Pretty much.
Well, Esther, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, fill in that last word or phrase correctly. Do that two times, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here's your first limerick.
At me, the girl fish let their lust flash. I'm well-groomed, which makes hearts in their bus dash. The ladies all flip at my hairy lip. The molly fish all dig a...
mustache.
Right. It seems hipster girls aren't the only rare species attracted to guys with mustaches. According to a new study by German biologist Ingo Schlupp, female Mexican molly fish also prefer males with fuzzy upper lips. Schlupp and her associates paired females with male mollies, some with whiskery faces, some without, and in every case, the females schlupped the mustached fish. All right, very good. Here's your next limerick.
Roller coasters give me a surprise. My mouth's open while I close my eyes. The bugs buzz around while I zoom up and down. So I'm swallowing too many...
flies.
Right. It probably seemed like such a cool idea to put a roller coaster in a forest like the British theme park Alton Towers did. Because, you know, there are so many bugs there that riders in the roller coaster can actually consume enough protein during the ride that an overpriced lunch becomes unnecessary. After many person-bug collisions on the ride, Alton Towers is now spraying down the ride with bug spray. Area flies are lamenting the loss of their favorite ride, Speeding Mouths of Doom. Here is your last limerick.
Wonder Woman once gave skirts a chance, but with fashions she still must advance. She keeps stopping crime and keeps up with time. She's finally wearing some...
pants.
Right. Executives at DC Comics have decided it's time to dress the 69-year-old Wonder Woman in something a bit more age-appropriate than her classic bustier micro-skirt and knee-high boots. Something, quote, more functional and less costumey, or so said the New York Times. The choice, a sensible jacket and stretchy pants. This was a compromise after the first idea, a velour jumpsuit and mall walkers, was rejected. Carl, how did Esther do in our quiz?
Esther did very well, Peter. Three correct answers. Esther, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Julia Sweeney has 3. P.J. O'Rourke has 2.
All right. P.J., you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. On Wednesday, the Senate unanimously confirmed General David Petraeus as the new top commander in blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. On Thursday, President Obama signed a bill imposing tough sanctions against blank over its nuclear weapons program.
Iran.
Right. Because of concerns over resistant bacteria, this week the FDA urged farmers to stop giving blanks to healthy animals.
Antibiotics.
Right. Eclipse, the third movie in the blank series, opened with the widest domestic release in U.S. history.
Shrek.
No. Twilight. According to the Sun newspaper, golfer blank has reached a divorce settlement with his wife.
Tiger Woods.
Right. A UK government job site attracted considerable attention this week when it posted an opening for blank.
New Prince of Wales.
No. For bikini mud wrestlers. Good news? Good news, I know, for all the unemployed bikini mud wrestlers who go to the government job center day after day hoping that this is the day a job will open up for them. How did PJ do in our quiz?
He had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. PJ now has 10 points and the lead.
All right. Very well done. Julia Sweeney,
yes.
You're up next. Fill in the blank. This week, the Supreme Court ruled that a ban preventing people in Chicago from owning blanks violated the Second Amendment.
Guns.
Right. On Thursday, Phil Jackson announced that he would be returning for his 11th season as coach of the blank.
Oh, Lord. Coach of a basketball team?
Yes. But specifically, the LA Lakers.
Oh,
a week
yes.
After losing his command in Afghanistan, blank announced he would be retiring.
McChrystal.
Right. A boat builder on Australia attracted the attention of the British press because of his success in blanking.
And of sailing his ship?
No, in teaching mice to surf. A set of 3 chest x-rays belonging to blank sold for $45,000 at a Las Vegas auction.
Oh. Michael Jackson?
No. Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
Spirit Airlines came under fire for an ad campaign for beach destinations like Cancun and Puerto Rico, showing well-oiled babes in bikinis and a tagline that read blank.
Come on!
That's not what it
That's
said.
Yes.
No, it said, check out the oil on our beaches. Spirit Airlines advertising team was last seen attempting to explain their joke to an angry flock of pelicans. Carl, how did Julia Sweeney do in our quiz? Oh,
Julia had 2 correct answers for 4 more points, and she now has 7 points, but PJ has the lead
All
still
right.
with 10 points.
Take it away, Paula.
All right, Paula, how many then does Paula need to win?
3 to tie, 4 to win outright.
Whoa.
You can do it.
You can do this, Paula. Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Tuesday, blank made a payment of $69 million to the government to clean up the Gulf.
BP.
Right. After 34 years on the bench, on Monday, Justice Blank officially retired.
Stevens.
Right, John Paul Stevens. According to wiretapped conversations, Rod Blagojevich considered filling Obama's Senate seat with talk show host Blank.
Oprah Winfrey.
Right. NASA announced that it would delay the end of the Blank program until next year.
Space shuttle.
Right. The new mayor of Reykjavik, Iceland, said he would not form a coalition government with anyone who had not blanked.
Anyone who had not been nice to them.
Who had not seen all 5 seasons of The Wire. Just 2 months after she announced she'd filed papers, actress Blank's divorce from husband Jesse James was finalized.
I can picture her face. I know she was in The Blind Side.
And her name is?
Vivian Vance.
No. Sandra Bullock is her name.
Yeah.
The mayor of Leicester, England, has apologized to locals after a public event at the local library during which blank.
Oh, yeah. they unleashed poisonous chemicals into the crowd.
No.
Mud wrestling.
What happened was he was doing this public event at the local library and his pants fell down. The mayor was a guest at the library's summer showcase, but more than books were on display when his pants fell to his ankles. Said a spokesman, quote, "The Lord Mayor of Leicester, Councillor Colin Hall, attended a function at a local library yesterday where he suffered an unfortunate problem with his trousers." Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Paula needed at least 4 correct answers to win outright, and she had 4 correct answers.
Well done, Paula.
Paula Poundstone is this week's champion.
Well done, Paula. You feel good about that?
Well, it's probably the only show ever where you only needed 4 to win.
Thankfully, you were there to take advantage.
Yeah, thank goodness.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will be the next espionage ring to be uncovered. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing information for those buying or selling their homes at houselogic.com/buy and sell. Pabst Brewing, proud supporter of local artists nationwide and of the NPR All Songs Considered series, online at PabstBlueRibbon.com. And Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals from physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at AngiesList.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Siri Balusu. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delar, Chicken and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big spy bust? PJ O'Rourke.
Undercover Amish at the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Julia Sweeney.
The real housewives of New York City turn out to be the fake housewives of New York.
Paula Poundstone.
The most dangerous undercover Russian agents ever discovered are the women of The View.
Destroying our society from within.
Well, if any of that gets revealed, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Julia Sweeney, Paula Poundstone, and PJ O'Rourke. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.